Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law with attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. In studio this morning is also attorney Patrick Smith. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Joe.
We're live on WeBeamTV.com and on Facebook if you want to watch the show today. And also, we're on about 12 stations around Florida. And if you're listening on a local station, we'll talk about the stations a little bit. But if you have a legal question, which is why we're here, talk about legal issues, help you with just any problem. It really doesn't have to be a legal problem. We'd both be glad to help solve you, have someone else to talk to, kind of get you pointed in the right direction. And you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Your question can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, health care surrogates, can be about family law, real estate law, personal injury, can be about any area of law, or just if you have a problem, we'd be glad to talk to you. And all you have to do is to dial that number, which is 877. Phone lines are open early this Saturday morning. The law office is open early on Saturday morning at 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Patrick, I don't talk too much about pet trust, but you and I were chatting a little bit about that. Why don't we start the show with why a person would need a pet trust?
So a lot of folks are in possession of animals that are going to outlive them, and they want to make sure the animal's cared for and provided for in the manner in which lifestyle the animal's now accustomed. So they commonly create a pet trust in order to tether a certain amount of assets and financial accounts to be able to go along with the animal once the person has passed away and ensure the animal is cared for.
So the trustee of the trust, his job would be basically to either, you know, find a home for the pet, mm-hmm. make sure it doesn't go to somewhere where it's going to be put to death, probably.
Right.
Maybe give instructions on the vet, what the dog's problems are, that make them fully aware of all that, and then and set aside a lump sum of money for it, probably.
Right, and based on my experience, you know, it's cats are kind of number four on the list, dogs are three, and you probably can guess what numbers one and two are.
Well, I know there are horses.
Horses are number one.
Yeah.
And then birds are number two.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But you see them all the time when people say, hey, I want to make sure I'm a good steward of all my assets, not just, you know, my financial accounts, my animals as well, and make sure they're cared for.
Now, if you have a question of any type, doesn't have to be about pet trust, can be about any type of trust or estate planning, 877-943-9673. I wonder how many people do a trust just for birds. I mean, you don't think about setting up a pet trust. I never have thought about it too much. Most of my clients have, I had a lady one time that had like 17 horses. So she left a whole bunch of money for the care of these horses. And a lot of people have several dogs or pets or a combination of both. Haven't heard of about a pet trust for fish either too much.
That's true. I've never done one for a fish. But there's always a first.
Yeah.
I stopped saying a long time ago I've seen everything, and now I say I've seen most things. And I'll watch next week what we'll have come in the office is some sort of pet trust for a fish.
Now, do you create your pet trust inside a person's regular living trust, or do you create a separate pet trust?
Commonly, we're doing it within the existing revocable trust. You could, of course, create a separate instrument, but most often it's optimally efficient to do it within the same revocable living trust you're disposing of the rest of the estate in.
All right. So we have David in Bradenton. Hey, David.
Morning, sir.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. I was... I guess I was the victim or whatever of it, not a victim, but about back in December, middle of December of 2016, I had one of these Gulf Coast legal attorneys, and they, it was an alleged illegal eviction conversion where I lived. And according to a Tampa law firm that I spoke with briefly, they said that, you know, they stole a lot of my real estate. They were like, safe deposit box keys that not only went to some different safe deposit boxes at different banks here in Florida and then out of state banks. And they also, you know, took and they converted a rare collection of law books.
Who was they?
The landlord and some people in my family. And the lawyer told me I had 3 years statutes of limitations to do anything about it. Would you know anything about that, sir?
Well, okay, they wrongfully evicted you?
Yes, sir. They didn't even go down to the courthouse to file papers. I had to go down there and file back against them.
And then they took the contents of your place? I'm not sure.
Yeah, pretty much. I went in and out of court myself. Their lawyer never showed up the second time for court. The attorney that I had, he said he'd rather not handle the case. So, and then before you knew it, for almost 2 years, I was moving stuff around in different storage places and ended up over in Sarasota and had to go to court over there. You know, but I was being malpracticed with
Well, what made you physically leave the property? I don't really quite understand all of your difficulties.
They locked me out, sir. It was an illegal lockout.
I see.
They put doors on the locks, and I didn't know. You know, all the lawyer told me is they can't do that, and that's all that he said. And I didn't know that if I were supposed to have, that I was supposed to call the sheriff out there. I did call the sheriff. They didn't really do much of anything about it. I didn't know I was supposed to, you know, get the sheriff to write a report.
And how long ago has this been?
It's been the middle of 2016, December.
Yeah. Well, David, I think your question, I think we'll probably have to talk to you off the air. I just don't think I can help you too much in the limited time I have to talk to you about it. And you do have a problem.
Yes, sir, I just wanted to know if the three-year statute of limitations, because that's what the first attorney that I had to help him with.
Well, most contractual statute of limitations is 5 years. I don't know
for conversion?
Well, see, I don't have the list of statute of limitations. There's hundreds and thousands of those with different timelines.
Yeah.
I've never heard of a 3-year statute of limitation on a conversion, but I'm just not sure.
But and David, just I'm sorry about the situation you found yourself in almost 3 years ago. But we would go back, of course, to the original lease that you had with the landlord. Was there, in fact, a written lease?
Oh yes, sir. Yeah. There was, but. In October, November, December, October of 2016, I lived with my mother on and off for many, many years and rented a room from her. Mm-hmm. And I was on the lease, and the pamphlet that the lawyer gave me said it doesn't make any difference whether you have a lease or not in a situation like that.
Yeah, but in any sort of contractual relationship, David, you're going to live and die first by the words on the page. So you would start with a good review of the actual lease. That's going to give you the sort of the rules to play by or the lay of the land. And then the statute would sort of fill in the gaps for anything that wasn't specifically covered in the lease. So let's start with the lease. You need a copy of that, and Joe's right. It would be optimal to discuss this off the air. So get a copy of the lease, and someone will be happy to review that with you and get you pointed in the right direction if there's a direction to head.
All right, then, sir. Thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thank you. All right, you're listening. You Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, along with Attorney Patrick Smith. We are taking your phone calls. Can be about any area of the law, any concern you have. You have a toll-free number at 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Patrick, before we change to another subject off of Pet Trust, it's always important to leave a sum of money, but it's also important that if that money's not used, if the pet dies before all the money is used, to have a contingent beneficiary.
Absolutely.
And that's why often when we create these, we create all of these in one trust, so there are other beneficiaries named in the other trusts that are not concerning pets.
And commonly there you see charities for animals as the contingent heirs, so that there's some sort of memorialized gift for the pet. So you see these sorts of things all the time.
And using no-kill shelters is very, very common in these type of trusts. Let's go to Mark in Tampa. Hey, Mark.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm trying to find out if any of you know of a way to make sure or to purchase catastrophic health insurance to find a reliable company and find out there's like a rating system for the health insurance companies, like with property and casualty, there's AM Best ratings.
Well, I think Patrick and I both would have a list of healthcare providers that we would use or that we are using or would use, and be glad to give you that information off the air.
Okay. All right. Very good.
So we'll give out our contact information here shortly, okay?
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye. Again, you're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. If you have a question about anything in the area of law or a problem you've had, or maybe you couldn't sleep last night and just worried about something, we'd be glad to help you with that. Patrick, let's talk about power of attorneys a little bit. Now, you and I had a conversation this week about a power of attorney.
Yes, sir.
And basically, a person had filed for divorce. And the question was, between you and I, at least, the question was the power of attorney valid? Was a power of attorney valid once the petition for divorce was filed?
Yeah, and the conclusion to that conversation was the immediate filing for divorce revokes the power of attorney between spouses. And the other side of that conversation was, well, what's the effect on any proposed will? And it's interesting because there's a fine line distinction between the statutes where the power of attorney is revoked immediately. The will is not until the actual divorce decree has been entered. So if a spouse, for some reason, they stop the divorce proceeding in the middle, and there's a provision made for a spouse in the will, that provision is going to stand. So it's an interesting distinction in the law there between power of attorneys and wills and how they're treated by filing for divorce.
Now, that also extends to trust.
Yes.
So it's either a will or a trust.
Yes.
So the example that we'd like to share with you, if someone is going through a divorce, but their will still leaves everything to their spouse and the divorce never takes place, then the provisions in the will or trust stand. If you're going through a divorce, though, and you've given someone a power of attorney, that power of attorney becomes void upon death. But even a more interesting question is, suppose the spouse uses the power of attorney after the petition is filed and takes some action using the power of attorney that doesn't really benefit the other spouse, then you got a problem, right?
Yeah, I think that transaction could be set aside. I mean, it's a pretty clear-cut rule under the statute when they filed for the divorce, and I think it's one of those situations, that's why that statute's in place, to prevent those sort of abuses.
Yeah. Sometimes it doesn't prevent it, and the innocent person that accepted the power of attorney and thought the person had the power and wasn't aware it was... That's why it's always good to publish those, number one.
Yes.
Record those.
And to review them periodically with your counsel.
Yeah. All right. So if you've given someone a power of attorney and you'd like to revoke it, hey, we'd talk to you about that as well. But if you have a legal question of any type, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673, 877-943-9673. What about healthcare surrogate power? Is that included in that statute, do you recall?
No, it wasn't specifically mentioned. That would be another sort of interesting distinction to see how the healthcare surrogate is treated. But since it's more akin to the power of attorney than it is to the will, I would guess it would be more likely suspended or revoked altogether as the power of attorney is, and treated less like the will is.
Let's go to Rick, who's calling. Hey, Rick.
Hello, how are you today?
Yeah, Rick, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from North Tampa. I'm visiting my son. I'm from way out of town. They're away on a three-day trip, and I just got up, and I listened to your station since I've been here quite a bit.
Well, great.
And so I'm down here because I have a problem with Social Security, and I just wondered if you guys could advise me for anything.
Okay, you're down here. Let me understand that first. You're down here. You live in another. You live in what state?
I live in Canada, but I live down here, and I'm a U.S. citizen. I was in the U.S. Air Force 5.5 years.
Okay, I understand now. Go ahead and ask your question.
The consulates up there, they won't help you vote. If I wanted to vote, since I've been there since 64, never been able to vote.
So you're a resident of where, though?
Toronto.
Okay. And you're a U.S. citizen?
Yes. And they don't help you vote at all. And then when my Social Security was due in 98, I filed for my Canadian pension. I filed for my U.S. Social Security pension. I had to send it to Philadelphia, which is not an office for Social Security, but I had a client who does my income tax and all that stuff for both countries, and they sent it down to Philadelphia, and I had sent that eight times in the last 4, 5, 6 years with my discharge papers, my American citizenship letter from the consulate, and my passport, everything. And they lost everything.
All right, Rick, before you continue this long story, have you been to the Social Security office?
Yes.
And what happened when you went there?
Well, when I went there, they said, this is not our fault. If you didn't get an application, it's your fault. And I said, how can you get an application if you send down and request one and they destroy your records?
All right. Well, here's what my answer would be to you. If you've done everything you can yourself and you don't have the success you desire, then you've done everything you can do, so now it's time to hire a Social Security attorney to assist you and to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish.
Well, what I was going to call you for, because you guys sound like you have a lot of integrity.
Okay.
Could you recommend somebody so I can, I'm going to be here another 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could recommend someone I could call, I really feel like I need that.
All right, I have an attorney in mind that's not with their firm that you could call that specializes in Social Security. If you call my office on Monday, I'd be glad to share that with you.
And what is your office number?
All right, 727.
Hold on, I'm not the quickest guy in the world. 727.
586. 3306.
3306.
Yeah, go to extension 200.
Extension 200, and your name, please.
Joe Pippin.
Please?
Joe Pippin.
Oh, I got it.
All
Joe
right.
Pick. Okay. Now, could I just mention something to you?
Go ahead.
About the politics between Canada and the U.S. that I think a lot of people.
All right, if it's quick, you can do it.
Oh, I will. When President Trump was running for office, and it was just before the election, Prime Minister Trudeau went down and visited President Obama. And on his way back, he said in an interview on a CTV and a CBC interview in Calgary, Alberta, that if President Trump gets in, he will move to Iceland. And the capital of Iceland is Reykjavik. I was stationed there, or flew in there many times. And the airstrip is Reykjavik. And there are people who are citizens, or let's say landed immigrants in Canada, who go over and fight for ISIS, and they come back and the RCMP won't do a thing to them. And I think that the American people should know that.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
All right. And I'll call you Monday.
Hey, Rick, thanks for your service, by the way.
And I'm proud to be an American. I love America, and I don't think people appreciate it that much. You should live somewhere else, and you'd kiss the ground here.
Well, amen to that. All right.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Ellen in Clearwater.
Hello.
Hey, Ellen.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. And you?
Oh, pretty good. First thing, I tuned in a couple minutes later, and I didn't. I know you have a guest with you. I don't know what type of law he practices, but I did hear about the dog trust, and I do have a dog.
Okay.
So is that also, he also works with the trust?
Yes. His primary offices right now are, though, in Claremont, Leesburg, and the villages, and Davenport and Polk County and so forth. So you live in Clearwater. He does estate planning. This is primary focus, just like mine. But so what can I do for you?
Okay. First thing is the call screener said I should ask you directly. What happened to Catherine?
Catherine is on a little sabbatical from her radio show.
So. Is her mom okay?
Her mom passed away, and that's why she...
Oh, my God. So. Okay. The question I have for you is, I have to do a trust.
Okay.
And I've already talked to you over the radio. I just haven't had the cash to come down to talk, you know, and go through everything.
Okay.
My uncle up north died many, many years ago, and my family member is convinced that we weren't notified of the will. We haven't talked to him in like 25 years. I doubt that he's going to do anything, considering he's going to try and take the house that belonged to my mother. So I really don't think there's any, you know, thing. But when I do the trust, I mean, you'll be in charge of it. And how do you notify people if they're in the trust but the address isn't current or anything like that?
We have ways of finding people and that are beneficiaries.
I'm sorry?
So we have ways of finding people that are beneficiaries, online, detectives. There's a lot of social media stuff that can be used. There are a number of search functions that we are very familiar with where we can find people.
And Ellen, my experience has been when they have money coming to them, they usually find you.
Not if you're not speaking.
But, you know, if you named us as your trust successor trustee, then we take whatever information and keep it in file. So if you know their current location and address, we would keep that in file. We might ask a few more questions about date of birth and things like that in other places they live, but we can find them.
Okay. Like a bill collector, I used to be one. So, yeah, hunt them down.
All right, Ellen, what else can I do for you?
Okay, I need to do a new power of attorney. Now, I know that you said at one point there's a couple different rules that have been changed, but I have a blank one that I had from my previous power of attorney that I discharged. Can I just use that temporarily?
I can't answer that because I don't know when that was drafted. You know, the laws changed on power of attorney substantially October 1st of 2011.
Okay, this is 2012.
Yeah, but I don't know who drafted that document or where you got it, so I can't really tell you if it's a good document or not. I'd have to see it.
Okay.
There are a lot of online documents you can get that are just sad, in my opinion. So, you know, I don't know where you got that. Some attorneys aren't up to date. Some attorneys might have prepared a document that really aren't, you know, estate planning attorneys. They're practicing in some other area mainly, and then they do a document kind of as a favor for someone. It's just I'd have to review the document before I could see it.
Okay. So I need to get all of that together.
Yeah.
And then you look at it.
Yeah.
And,
there's no charge for our first. When we meet with somebody like that, there's no charge for the first meeting. So you can come into the meeting expecting not to have to pay unless you have documents prepared, basically.
What kind of dog do you have, Ellen?
I'm sorry, sir?
What kind of dog do you have?
I have a 23-year-old Pomeranian Chihuahua.
A 23-year-old? That's got to be close to some kind of record, Joe.
23 times what, 7?
He's spoiled. He just had ham spoon fed to him right now. So now he's taking a nap.
All right.
But, you know, I don't know how long, you know, because you could see, you know, he's getting old.
Well, Joe's a big dog lover, so when you come in for the review, make sure to bring your Pomeranian so Joe can meet this 23-year-old Pomeranian Chihuahua.
All right. Hey, Ellen, we've got other calls to take, so let me move on here. I'd be glad to meet with you, though. All right, thank you.
Bye.
Hey, Joe, that might be a rough case.
Let's go to Kathy in Jacksonville Beach.
Good morning.
How are you? Listening on WBOB, I bet.
Yes. The question I have is, I live in a condo here, and it's a one-bedroom. And I bought it in one day for my son because he was graduating from college and he had a job up here.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I've lived here for quite a few years, and as we've dealt with the board, I've come to find out that having a one bedroom and the people who have a three bedroom, we pay the same in maintenance fee. I don't have a garage. Many people don't have a garage. We had new roofs put on the entire community, and I think there's about, I don't know, 250 condos in here. And we had to pay for the roofs on the condos as well as the same for the roofs on our units. And then I come to find out that we're paying for the electricity in the garages. And lately I come to find out we're paying the same for water as everyone else. And so a neighbor of mine went to an attorney about it, and he said there's nothing you can do about it. And I was wondering what your thoughts were on this.
Well, a lot of it is based on the documents you signed when you originally purchased the property. That seems like totally unfair to me that somebody pays the same amount for a one-bedroom and a three-bedroom. I mean, usually based on the amount of space you have that's allocated to the amount of expenses, and everybody's expenses are different. So I don't know. There sounds like some unusual documents there. So I wouldn't. If somebody has already been to an attorney and an attorney's reviewed all the documents and said nothing, you can do. But basically, all you could do at this point is get a second opinion from somebody that gets to see the documents.
Uh huh. Okay. How much would it cost to come in and show them to you?
I would say that's not my practice area or expertise, so I'd probably okay. I could try to find you another attorney in that area that could help you, but I don't think it would be myself.
Okay. Should I call you about it?
Yeah, you can.
You?
Sure.
How about if I email you?
You can email me, and I'll try to find you one.
Okay, and what is that address?
Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com.
Okay. Yeah, and it's interesting because even the board votes on everything for us, and they voted for the property manager to have an exorbitant amount of money. They never listen to you when you come in and talk to them, and it's very frustrating. Our maintenance fee just went up, and it's very expensive. It's the most expensive in this area.
Condos can be pretty scary. The place that I stay in Jacksonville, across the street, there's some condos, and they've been working on construction on these condos for now 2 or 3 months. So I asked what's going on over there. And what's going on over there is that the water leaked down between between the walls from the roof, and they've got a major repair process going on that's going to take up to a year, and all the condo owners, I was told, are being assessed $82,000 each for just...
$82,000?
Yeah. And then there was another condo, one-bedroom condo I was looking at over in the Sawgrass area. And that those condos needed new roofs, and one was being sold. But there's going to be a $50,000 roof repair being assessed to the condo owner. So I'm like, wow, I mean, condos are scary when you get these big assessments like that.
Yeah, I know. We had a big assessment about 3 years ago. And, I mean, I bought this in one day so my son could move in, and he only stayed here for a year. And then I couldn't sell it, so I moved in. And, I mean, I would have bought a two-bedroom or something, but they didn't tell us anything about this when we bought it. And I talked to other neighbors. They have one bedroom. They thought it went by square footage, too. And, you know, a friend of mine said, well, let's go talk to the board. And I said, there's no use talking to them. I talked to them a million times about things. They don't pay any attention to us. And then they were going to get this rule about, you know, you could have a big dog living above you, where years ago there was a certain amount of weight that was, you know, discussed on that. And then they said, well, you know, if people didn't pick up after the dog, well, then there were going to have to be fees added. And so then the manager said, yes, and we all pay the same, don't we? And I mean, it's just ridiculous, because if you own a three-bedroom, you've got a lot more money probably than a person with a one-bedroom.
Yep. And you got more space that needs to be repaired, too. So
yeah, plus, and when you go to sell it, when you have a larger maintenance fee, it's harder to sell for a person with a one-bedroom.
All right. Well, shoot me an email, and I'll be glad to try to find you somebody.
Okay, thanks so much.
Let's go to Dolores in Jacksonville.
Hi.
Hey, Dolores.
Yes, my husband and I have a will. We have a rental property, and we have a disabled son that's on disability. And we were wondering how we could... leave this property, and he has a source of income. We have our daughter, and in the event that my husband and I get disabled or die, that she'll be over his portion and get a percentage of for handling it. And then we have, if she dies, her daughter will be responsible for our son. And I would like your advice in how, what's the wise way of handling this. This is from our opponent.
All right, so your document should include what's called a supplemental needs trust.
Supplemental?
Yeah, so if you're giving a share, say a half, I don't know, how many children do you have?
We have two.
Two, okay. So the 50% to your disability go into what's called a supplemental needs trust, and the supplemental needs trust would provide for him into the maximum degree that would not disrupt his government benefits.
Supplemental needs trust.
Yep.
And
we do those all the time, actually, so it's a very common thing in estate planning.
Okay.
Patrick, do you have any other advice for that?
Yeah, you mentioned a rental property, Dolores. Is that rental property free and clear?
Yes, it is.
So what you may want to consider doing, if you haven't already done so, is creating some sort of LLC as a liability layer. So
an LLC?
Yeah, so in addition to having good umbrella coverage and liability coverage in the form of insurance, you want to drop the rental property into this LLC and then privately convey the LLC to the trust to avoid any probate. But that way, if the rental property generates any liabilities, they're only going to be able to come after that rental property. It'll sort of insulate the remainder of your estate and also allow you to have it passed to the trust for management by your daughter on your special needs son's behalf. So you could really sort of optimally maximize everyone's protection.
You know what? I really need to come and talk to someone, talk to you.
Well, Joe's the man for
you. Yeah, Dolores, I'm in Jacksonville every other week. I'll be there this Friday. If you want to call our office when you hang up, Patrick and I'll both give our contact information for you to make for you for everyone to be able to contact us, okay?
That'd be great.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so if you'd like to contact the firm, we have a toll-free number, 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226. I'm going to give you my contact information. Patrick has different numbers, but you can also reach him through the main number. But it's 1-800-226-3529. I go to Jacksonville every other week. I'll be there this coming Thursday and Friday. My other primary locations that I deal with are in Polk County. We have offices in Davenport and Lakeland and Sun City Center and Pinellas County. Don't charge anything for first appointments. You can call our toll-free number, 1-800-226-3529. You can email me at joe@attypip.com, or you can text me at 727-667-3967. Patrick and I both do numerous speaking engagements. I have two today. I'm going to leave a few minutes early to let Patrick finish up the show. I'll be speaking at a mobile home park off of 54th Avenue in St. Petersburg. And at 1 o'clock, I'm speaking to the Council of the Blind at a luncheon meeting. So Patrick and I both love getting out there. We both like doing radio, helping as many people as we can. But we also like to go out into the public and meet people and have discussions and give talks and so forth. If you want to do that as well, 1-800-226-3529. Patrick, give us your contact information.
So you can reach me at the number Joe mentioned,
1-800-226-3529.
That muscle memory had to kick in. Yeah. I don't give that one out very often. Extension 306 is my extension, by the way. You can email me, Patrick Smith, all one word, at attypip.com. You can find us on Facebook at Attorney Patrick Smith, and also on Instagram at Attorney Patrick Smith.
All right, very good. Let's go to the one we got to Dolores. So if you have a question, we have about 17 minutes left in the show. And if you would like to give us a call at the show here, it's 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open.
Joe, in between calls, I get so excited. And all this talk about dogs makes me think of, I'm excited like Shep from Live PD. I know we were talking about it before the show, and I keep waiting for someone from Pasco County to call in because I got a feeling that it's going to become a thing where people are driving around suspiciously between the hours of 9 to midnight, Fridays and Saturdays nights, to try to get on Live PD. I'm not saying I've personally considered it, but maybe I have. I'm just saying that show brings such great light to how brave the men and women of our law enforcement agencies are and the dangers they face daily. So if you haven't checked it out, check it out. But Shep, my favorite canine on that show, he's so excited.
What channel is that? I've never seen
that. It's A&E. Friday nights, 9 to midnight. And Saturday night, 9 to midnight.
It's a live show with policemen.
32 camera crews in 8 states, including beautiful Pasco County, Florida.
All right.
It's amazing.
Let's go to Craig in Jacksonville. Hey, Craig.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I am under contract to buy a house in St. Johns County, but there is a small judgment against me recorded in Duval County.
Mm-hmm.
The title company is saying I need to clear up the Duval County judgment to close on the property in St. Johns County.
The title company or the mortgage company?
Well, it's the title company that the mortgage company uses.
All right, but it's really a mortgage problem. It's more or less a credit problem for you rather than...
Well, it's not keeping me from qualifying for the loan. They're just saying that in order to close, the Duval County judgment will have to be released.
But it's a requirement of the mortgage company.
Yeah, because they say it's
okay.
On the road.
All right, so if that's their requirement, you're going to either pay it off or find another mortgage company.
Okay, so it's just at the discretion of the mortgage company. It's not really a legal requirement of some type.
No, I don't think so. Would you, Patrick?
No, I think it's that particular mortgage company.
Yeah, that mortgage company doesn't want you to have that lien, or they don't want their lien to be first. You know, it's just it's a priority of the mortgage company. It's nothing. I don't think it's anything else.
Well, they said if, like, you know, 5 years from now, if you go to sell the property, that judgment could stand in the way of the mortgage.
There you go. They're worried about the priority of the judgment lien.
So that's correct. It would have priority.
Well, I'm not looking at all the papers. But I think that's their concern. I mean, I don't know what else it would be their concern if they're making that a requirement.
Right. Okay. All right. Thanks. I'm just working on getting a partial release on it again.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thanks.
Let's go to Ella in St. Petersburg. Hey, Ella.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah.
What can we do for you?
I got a letter from an organization that my husband apparently put money into, and I just got a letter from them saying that they are going into bankruptcy. So I called the number that they gave me, which was their lawyer, and they said, no, they're trying to reorganize. Now, what exactly does that mean?
Well, you can reorganize in a bankruptcy.
And does that mean that they are defunct or what?
Well, no, it means they want to try to stay in business and reorganize their debt and maybe stretch out the debt to have more time to pay it, usually.
That's probably it.
Yeah.
In other words, it doesn't sound very good to me. What do you think?
Well, how much money do you have into it? Did your husband pass away?
Yes, he did.
And this is some type of financial product?
It's around $30,000. That's about it.
It's a loan?
Pardon?
It's a loan. What kind of an asset is it?
Kind of an asset.
What did he invest into?
Oh, some organization that was going to do some great things for the Navy.
So, okay, I don't understand. Are you supposed to get this money back at some point?
I don't know. That's what I'm curious about. All I received is this letter saying that they are notice of bankruptcy. And I called the lawyer that was listed on the information sheet that I got, and that's what they simply told me, that they are trying to reorganize. And if you want, you can call your own lawyer to discuss it further, but
yeah.
It doesn't sound good to me. It sounds like they're just defunct.
Well, they're reorganizing through the bankruptcy court to try to get additional time to pay the debt. I don't quite understand what value it is to you on what you might get back, but I don't think I'm going to determine that on this call, so probably have to know more information.
In other words, it's probably just sit on it, basically, and see what happens. Is that it?
Well, I don't think you individually are going to take a course of action that are going to change anything.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll just wait and see what happens.
All right.
Ella,
all right.
Sorry about your husband, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's go to Joe in Largo.
Hello?
Yes.
I own a house, and my landlord, the landlord next door to me rented out the house to some people that started a dog kennel. And I live in unincorporated Largo, and so it's more like the country area, but it's not country. What rights do I have to go after the landlord for the dogs barking and raising cane? We've called code enforcement, the police, and everybody else involved.
Well, you have the right to the quiet enjoyment of your home. So you might have to hire an attorney to take some legal action. If the county is not doing their job properly, you keep complaining to the county continually, but you might also have to hire an attorney to get some type of an injunction or some type of order. Patrick, do you have any better advice than that? I don't know.
Do you happen to live in some sort of deed-restricted community that has an HOA or anything of that nature?
No.
Yeah, it's unincorporated.
Yeah, I think just visiting some sort of general civil litigator to see where you could hang your hat on some statute on nuisance or something of that nature would probably be the best starting point.
All right, and you can get me an attorney if I send you an email?
I'll send you an email on how to find an attorney, yes.
Okay, so I'll make contact with you, and I'll wait for your response.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to Peter and Fernando Beach. Hello, Peter.
Yes, hello. How are you this morning?
Good. Where are you calling from?
Ormond Beach, Florida.
Oh, Ormond Beach, okay.
I have a warehouse that I'm planning on selling, and I did get a bid on it. And what he wants to do, he wants to put, say, 30% down and finance 5% with a balloon note at the end and on or before closing, which would be December. Do I need to have two separate contracts, like a lease contract and then a for sale contract?
All right, so I think I missed getting ready to let Patrick take over because I've got to go do my speaking engagement. So there's a 30% down.
Right.
And what's the rest of it?
And he wants a balloon note. He wants a balloon note to buy it in December, on or before December. Do I need to make two different type of contracts? Once a lease contract, and then another contract for sale contract.
Okay, so you're going to lease it between now and December.
Right.
And when does he want the 30% down?
He's going to put the 30% down before he moves in on the lease.
Yeah, I would say you'd definitely need a separate lease contract.
And then when that lease is over, then the balloon note.
Yeah, they can refer to one another, but I think you definitely need two separate documents.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. All right. Thank you. All right. So I'm going to be leaving now. Patrick Smith's going to take over for the rest of the show. I'm off to a speaking engagement. If you'd like to contact our office, it's 1-800-226-3529.
And that's about as gracefully as you can do that, folks, on live radio. So, Joe, thank you so much. Good luck with the speaking engagement. This is Attorney Patrick Smith with you for the duration of the program. 877-943-9673. That's your number to be part of today's program. If you have a legal question, we are, of course, happy to help you any way we can. 877-943-9673. So give us a call now. Still about 10 minutes here left in the show to help you with any of your legal needs. 877-943-9673. If you're out there and you're wondering where you can visit us on the World Wide Web, it's attypip.com. You can check out the firm website. We have literally hundreds of articles and pages for you, and they're absolutely free of charge to you. So you can check it out and let us know what you think. We love your feedback. That website is there just for you, the consumer, to help you out and be there as a resource. So if there's things you'd like to see changed, additional items you'd like to see added, just let us know and we will be happy to do our very best to accommodate those requests so that we can better serve you. Joe and I, very service-oriented folks, hence the live radio program we do early on a Saturday morning and all the public speaking engagements. So we love it. Our heart is into it. It is what we're passionate about. And on my Instagram feed, we actually got some questions coming in, and one of them was, what got me interested in the practice of law? Well, actually, it was partly the guy sitting across from me who just left for the speaking engagement, Joe Pippin. I grew up listening to Joe's radio program, and I actually wanted to go into ministry and be a pastor, but actually got a calling into the practice of law. So here I am, and a client absolutely warmed my heart one day when she said, well, you don't see it, Patrick, but God called you to be a minister still. He just called you to be a legal minister. So that's how we think about it. That's how I think about my practice, my legal ministry to you. So every day we're out here trying to do what we can to minister to your legal needs. So if we can minister to you this morning, give us a call now. 877-943-9673, 877-943-9673. You can give us a call. We're live and local, and we're happy to help any way we can. If you want to email me, patricksmith@attypip.com to email Joe, just joe@attypip.com. And then Joe and I both are available for speaking engagements. So if you have a club, group, or organization that you would like to have us come out and do a presentation for, let us know. We'll be happy to make ourselves available absolutely free of charge. We can even customize our topic. If you have a particular issue you'd like to discuss, most popular for now is definitely the new Power of Attorney Act. People are still reeling out there from these practical changes that are just now impacting people. Even though the act changed in 2011, We're just now 8 years later getting a true sense of what this act did in terms of practical impact on hospitals and financial institutions and loved ones. So maybe you're out there and you have a question about your power of attorney. Give us a call now, 877-943-9673. Let's go to Tampa and let's talk to Sarah. Sarah, welcome to Ask an Attorney.
Okay, years ago I put my house into a life estate to my two children.
Yes, ma'am.
Now one wants to relinquish his interest. Can he just sign a quitclaim deed, and does he sign it back to me, or does he sign it over to his sibling?
Typically, if you've done a life estate deed, you have to look at the deed. So there's a couple different kinds. If it's an enhanced life estate deed, you have the ability to call sort of the whole interest back to yourself, Sarah, and then basically reissue it. If it's not, if it's more traditional, where he's already holds what we call a vested remainder interest in the life estate deed, then he would need to sign it over to you. And you see these life estate deeds, they've really lost a lot of their popularity since the 70s, 80s, 90s. Back in 1975, the estate tax exemption, which today is $11.4 million, was around $176,000, Sarah. So you had people doing these life estate deeds to basically give away the asset as a way to get around the estate tax. And what they were doing was they would give away the asset, keep the life estate. The life estate they kept had value under Table 7520 of the Internal Revenue Code. So if, say, the property's worth $500,000, I keep a life estate. You sound like a relatively young lady, Sarah. Let's say you're young and you're in your 40s or 50s. Let's say that $500,000 property, the life estate you kept's worth $300,000. Well, now you've given away.
I just want to know, can he sign it back to me, or does he quit claim it back to his sibling?
Typically, he would quit claim it back to you as the life estate holder at this point.
And then I would quit claim it to his sibling.
But again, Sarah, you would want someone to review that deed with you ahead of time, and you would also want to make sure that that's going to be the optimal approach, because God forbid one of them passes before you. Now we've got a probate issue, Sarah, because of the fact that they've died with that vested remainder interest in the property. So there are more optimal ways sometimes to pass along property to children. And I'm assuming you're doing this in an effort to avoid the probate process, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, the other downside there is if you're not passing away, if you're prolonged incompetent, remember, nothing vests in possession to those remainder interest holders until you've actually passed. So there are some drawbacks with a life estate deed that may need to be concerned or addressed, these concerns specifically addressed. So I would recommend sitting down with your counsel and having the entire document reviewed first before you start shifting anything around.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Sarah. Have a great Saturday, okay?
You too. Bye-bye.
All righty. Let's go to Jacksonville, and let's talk to Tom. Tom, welcome to Ask an Attorney.
Oh, thank you. I purchased a house from a lady who's a real estate agent, but it was her personal house, a rental house. And she didn't disclose that she'd had septic tank problems. And I took her to court, and the judge ruled against me because her contention was, well, I didn't know had septic tank problems. And then she said, well, I told him about it, and he said he would pay for it. Well, I didn't have a record at the time that she had previous knowledge. A local plumber had told her twice that, yes, it's a septic tank issue. Like I said, I didn't have that at the court hearing, didn't obtain until afterwards. The judge ruled against me, and then when I got these papers, I sent the papers to him, but I didn't hear anything. Do I have any recourse?
Yeah, without seeing the paperwork, I couldn't say for sure, Tom, but I'll give you the office number.
Okay.
And you can just give us a call, and we'll be happy to help any way that we can. It's 727.
727-586-3306. Okay.
And just hit extension 200. That's for my law partner, Joe Pippin, and he handles the Jacksonville location. And he'll be happy to get you pointed in the right direction on that matter to see if there's any sort of more pleasant resolution we can bring about for you, okay?
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
All right. Tom, good luck with everything.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir. All right, you're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law, with Attorney Patrick Smith, sitting in the seat for Attorney Joe Pippin, who had to scoot out a little early for a speaking engagement. And you can, of course, give us a call, 877-943-9673. That'll be your number to give us a call on the show next time we are with you. We are out of time for today's broadcast. Thank you to Attorney Joe Pippin for being here with me today. Thank you to all the guys working hard in the studio here. Thank you to everybody watching live on Instagram and Facebook. This is Attorney Patrick Smith signing off saying God bless, stay safe, and go Gators.